everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And I'm Alan.
We run ReverseThieves.com, an anime and manga blog and podcast site, where you can get 3+ blog posts every week, as well as various other podcasts, including our seasonal SWAT reviews, where we look at the first episode of a bunch of new shows of the season. And of course, you can get all the old episodes of the monthly Speakeasy Podcast there as well.
And if you have any questions or comments or show topics, please email them to us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm HisuiRT.
And I'm NarutakiRT.
And if you like this podcast or any other thing that we do, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps us go up in the ranks and contact new listeners. Let's check in with what's new on the blog this month. This month's manga of the month is Land of the Lustrous. I talk a little bit about the anime, but it's mostly to talk about how it's different from the manga, is different from the anime, which one you should watch, and why you should just be interested in the series as a whole. It's a very unique manga, so definitely worth checking out, especially if you like, you know, kind of that experimental 70s style shoujo.
And we've been reviewing some of the Netflix anime. They've been coming out almost like on a weekly basis. There's been a new one. So we've done some SWAT reviews for that, and those will continue as long as Netflix just keeps randomly chucking them out there at us. I also wanted to mention our new section that we do at the end of every month is Most Wanted List, which is a look at what came out that month. So like DVD releases or manga releases here in the US, and you know, like what to keep track of, what to look forward to, what, you know, we're like that we're really excited about that month. So this is episode 99 of the Speakeasy Podcast, which means the next episode is 100 for us, a big milestone, and we're not totally sure how we're going to celebrate. I have this idea that we maybe will answer a whole bunch of like anime questions, sort of like a quiz kind of to show all of our just favorite things and maybe get at some like little different things that we've never talked about before. But, Al, you had also...
If anybody would like to send any well wishes or just messages for our 100th episode, that would be super appreciated. You know, if you're a podcaster, I'm sure that you can throw in a little MP3 that we can put in there. Or if, you know, that's too much trouble or you just don't have that kind of setup, then, you know, just write us something and we'll read it on the air. Ongoing investigations. What we've been reading, watching, and playing. For full disclosure, we got a very interesting book in the mail to review. It is Red Colored Elegy, and it's from Drawn and Quarterly. They clearly gave us this book because it's about like a prestige title. It's one of those, you know, one of those titles that is, you know, not around the big franchise.
And Drawn and Quarterly doesn't release a ton of manga. They're very selective, and I feel like they usually go for stuff that either has like very historical significance or is very experimental, which is sort of their entire line of comics, but it just fits in with whatever their brand kind of is. It's nothing anybody else was really going to, you know, it's not very commercial.
Yeah, like Viz or Kodansha was not going to pick up this puppy anytime soon. Plus, it doesn't feel like, it feels like if it was going to get an adaptation today, like modern day, it would be like a live action film, not, you know, feature anime.
And this is from Seiichi Hayashi, who was really influential in the, like, underground Garo, I think he's Garo, right? Scene of comics from Japan in, like, the 60s and the 70s.
I know he wrote for Garo for a while, but I think, like, a lot of those comics are, a lot of those, like, underground titles usually had to go where the work was, so he might have worked for other underground or, you know, kind of off-the-beaten-path magazines, but I definitely remember Garo being one of them.
But just in case you're not really familiar, it's sort of this departure from style at the time and much more, you know, it could be, it's just like the style is much more of a departure from what we traditionally think of as manga. It's more, it could be like surreal or more even like grotesque or experimental, I guess is how, or alternative.
The little essay at the end says he was majorly influenced by the French New Wave. And if you know anything about film theory, French New Wave is very experimental, breaking like the traditional norms and molds of, you know, conventional cinema. And, you know, it's very influential on a lot of directors. And it would make sense that some, you know, an artist that was influenced by that kind of film would create, you know, comics and manga of the same variety.
So even though that this is from the 60s and 70s, I think what's so interesting about it is from a modern perspective, you wouldn't look at this and go, oh, well, now manga all looks like this. It's still, if the comic like this came out today, it would still be experimental and it maybe wouldn't be as unexpected, but as far as what we're used to seeing in manga, especially in the US, I feel like you would still look at this and think, oh, wow, this is very alternative. This is like a different, very different approach to manga. You know, it's not Shonen Jump, essentially.
It's not even like standard seinen, mainstream Jose or anything like this. This is very definitely the type of story that you'd only see in some kind of underground magazine.
I think the style is, it's much more, even more minimal. This particular style, I'm not talking about Garo in general, it could be all kinds of different things. But this particular manga, it's very minimal. There's like very few lines. It's not heavily rendered in any way. It's not super realistic looking. I did struggle sometimes to figure out what was going on in certain panels throughout the story. I mean, the story itself is pretty straightforward. It just has a lot of weird imagery, I think, that kind of goes along with it.
I think it doesn't also help that neither of the main characters, like, every once in a while I was like, wait, which of the two main characters are you? Especially because he doesn't emphasize a lot of the secondary sexual characteristics. And then if he's also going a little abstract at times, I had to like follow for a panel or two. Oh, this is the main guy of the relationship at this point. Oh, this is the main lady.
Yes, agreed. That sometimes it can be confusing. And like I said, the story is fairly straightforward. It's about two artists who are in a relationship. They don't, in my reading of it, they're not particularly in a good relationship, you know? It's not really, like, good for either of them. I also felt, I don't know, maybe it was because really this is just, like, not my wheelhouse of the type of art that just really, like, speaks to me. But like I said, oftentimes I was really confused about what was even happening. Like, the base of the story, like, I got, but there were just portions of it where I just didn't, because there's not very much dialogue. I guess I forgot to mention that. There's not a ton of dialogue or exposition or anything, so if I was having trouble following the panels, I just was then unable to really decipher anything.
I think part of the problem is that, in a way, it's almost half a musical, because a lot of the scenes, especially like the kind of minimal dialogue, highly dramatic scenes, have song lyrics in the background. And I feel the artist is really trying to, like, essentially, they all seem to be popular songs at the time. So, like, if you knew the song, you'd be like, oh, I definitely get what he's going for in this scene. But since these are all 70s Japanese, like, you know, kind of old man pop music, it is a little like, I do feel like some of the impact of the scenes is lost. Whereas if we knew those songs, I feel like certain emotional beats would be a little easier to grasp. Like I said, there's an extensive essay at the end, but I feel even if there was like a, here's an explanation of the song and what it's going for, you would kind of, it would still be disconnected enough that I don't think it would have the full impact if you like knew the songs and they had an emotional resonance with you. Like, I feel like if this was like live action and you could hear the songs, I think even if you didn't know them, just hearing the music and the, you know, the singer singing the song, I think would get over 80 to 90% of it. But since these are just lyrics on a page to things that we don't know, I think it just, I don't think it has the same impact as it would for someone reading the book at the time.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the essay a couple of times, Al, because the essay is almost the best part of this.
I got like 10 times more from the essay just for like how it explained like the Dosai relationships and like put so much of the story in context, and just kind of like this mood of Japan in the era that you wouldn't normally see, because it's not about like student revolutions or big political things. It's about like almost unspoken mores and,
and sort of the shifting morals
of the time. Yeah. And that's like,
and progress from a very, very low level. Like, it's not about the progress of the age or the, you know, it's just about, it's this real snapshot of two people, you know? So it's coming at it from a very singular thing that's supposed to represent something bigger.
Yeah, because it's about, like, Dosai is, like, these people who are in college or just out of college who are living together with no necessary, we're not necessarily living together to get married. They might get married, but that is not the reason that they are living together. And in, it's like in the age before, it would have been shockingly scandalous and just unheard of. Oh! And afterwards, just commonplace. But it's in that era where it's just acceptable enough to do that your peers don't have a problem with it, but the older generation look and just like, these kids today living in sin kind of thing.
And I felt like it also, even though the two characters are in that type of relationship, it's almost like they don't know how to define it. Mm-hmm. They don't fully, I don't feel like they fully embrace it or accept it all the time. It's,
yeah.
They question it too because it's just not like, normal for them, or not normal for the society, I guess.
And there's like no really good examples. Like if it's been around for like 30 years, you're like, well, those two people I know, they did fine, and you know, they're still happily together. Whereas if you're like a pioneer, you're basically, you know, you're making every mistake because you have no one else to kind of emulate or avoid the mistakes of. And that doesn't still stop people from making mistakes, but
that being said, I found this story so depressing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, I think from a historical context, certainly the essay adds so much to it. But from, like, sort of like an entertainment, you know, I was like, oh, okay, thank you for your contribution. I understand that this contribution was very important, and you really get that, especially, like I said, like we said, from the essay. But it's not something that I want to revisit or, you know, it's, I guess it's weird. It's like, I don't know how I feel about recommending it or not.
It seems such a weird manga dead end. And I almost would recommend it to somebody more interested in Japanese culture. Like somebody who, like, what was it like to live in the late 60s, early 70s in Japan? Almost like, not like what you see on TV, but like, what was it actually like to live in the trenches? But you don't want something like heavy, like a novel. I feel like that's more the recommendation I'd give to somebody who wants that kind of, or like, let me like, read this, get kind of a headscape, and then move into, like, novels about the era. I also feel like it's also good because I feel like this kind of story feels like it influences movies. So if you're a big, like, drama, Japanese drama buff, I feel like it's, or like film buff, especially about like very kind of like, you know, more mundane things. I feel like that's the kind of, it's going to be, those are the kinds of medium that's going to influence more. And that might be what you want to go for.
All right, so moving on to another sort of experimental creator, but this is in the anime realm. So Masaaki Yuasa, well known at this point for his style and his surreal, you know, stories, or his sort of surreal approach to visuals. You might know him from Devilman Crybaby and Ping Pong the Animation. His latest work, I think it's his latest work, is Lou Over the Wall. And the strange and fascinating thing about this is that this is an all-ages children's film. So I just want to say that,
just like Devilman Crybaby.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, kind of if you're familiar with his work at this point, I wasn't really, like, wasn't sure he could do it, you know? Like, oh, he's gonna, like, slip in some weird stuff. And he is totally capable of making a child-friendly film. Lou Over the Wall is sort of a very classic, almost like a classic monster story, because it's about this boy who has gone back to his father, with his father, to his hometown, and it's like a island and a fishing, they do a lot of fishing, and he is from Tokyo and he just, you know, is not into it, and he's dealing with his mom being back in Tokyo, and there's sort of like a family rift, and his one passion is music, and he doesn't really, hasn't made friends with anybody yet, but one of his songs, I think he puts it on YouTube or something like that. And then a few other of the kids on the island find it. And they're like, oh my God, you're a musician too? Like, join our band! Be in our band! Let's make a band! So at the same time, the island sort of has this history and mythology about mermaids. And they even used to have a mermaid, like, amusement park. So they're always telling them to, like, stay away from the water at night and, you know, watch out. And of course, he meets a mermaid because they're really attracted to music. And she's this little girl named Lou, and she's super excited about music, and she just wants to dance, and she wants to make friends. That's her whole goal. So between, like, the band and then this little girl, they sort of upset the balance of the island, and in classic monster style story, the monsters have to save the humans, even though the humans are being ungrateful meanies, and, you know, like, that they kind of come together at the end.
And of course, there's lots of vore filled boy mermaid sex throughout the whole thing, right?
No.
What? You sure?
There's not any like weird sexual imagery. I at least I didn't pick up on any. It's still has some of his surreal style, not, of course, not nearly as much, but it still has his sort of signature look. And there are some really, like, funny bits, especially when there's, like, any dancing involved. It can get a little bit more extreme. But yeah, it was really a fun film, music based, lots of music in it, and lots of, like, performances, and, you know, I mean, I don't think that the characters were especially deep or thought-provoking, but I thought that the story was really sort of classic and nicely done and really enjoyable, and I thought there were, the thing I love so much is really seeing a follow-through from something very briefly mentioned at the beginning, and so there's a lot of follow-through of little things that they drop about either other people on the island, and, you know, how they feel about mermaids, and, like, their pasts, and how that ends up connecting to the final arc of the story. So I thought it was, yeah, they just did a really nice job. I think it's a really fun movie that a lot of people will enjoy.
Yeah, I unfortunately didn't get to see it. I feel like Yuasa kind of works best when he's a little constrained, Like, I've always liked, like, I liked Ping Pong and
Loved Ping Pong
and Tatami Galaxy because he was adapting something and thereby felt a little more constrained. And, like, he definitely always expresses himself. He definitely makes the work his own. But I always like a little less when he's just given, like, total free rein. Like, I feel like it's kind of like my feelings about garlic. Like, a little bit, I think, really adds a great flavor, but too much, and I can't take it anymore. And that's always been my feeling about him. And I feel like working on the restraint of a kid's film, like, would hem him in just enough that I'd enjoy his style, but constrain him enough that I'd still enjoy the story.
And I was surprised to find out, so just to be clear, this is not adapted. I know you weren't saying it was, Al, but I just wanted to make sure everybody knows this is an original. And he actually wrote it, too. And so I'm, like, doubly impressed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you wrote it, too. And, you know, just that he was able to, like you said, Al, to sort of do the children's film thing. And that it, and I feel like it, like, really worked. So I hope that he does more of that. I think for me also, I'm not always he's very hit or miss for me. And this definitely hit in the right place. And so I'd love to see more, like, in this vein.
I mean, actually, I wouldn't mind if he did, like, kind of commercial, experimental, because I feel like, you know, you can basically sell yourself with the commercial and then please, you know, the hardcore art fans with the experimental. And then I can just watch all the commercial stuff.
Right, yeah. I'd love to see a TV series, you know. I don't think it would be This World. I think they sort of, you know, wrapped it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just sort of for a similar age, I guess, would be really fun.
As my pact with Kate goes, every once in a while, there are certain things I must talk about on this podcast.
Oh, I know what this is. I saw it on our notes for what we were going to talk about, and I thought, I don't know what is that title? All right. Obviously, Al knows what it is, so it's fine. Now I remember.
Kate just realizes that, all right, every once in a while, Al's going to talk about a Type Moon thing on this podcast, so be it. And every once in a while, Al's going to talk about something by Kenjiro Hata on this podcast, so be it. And this time, I'm talking about Kenjiro Hata's new series, Generally Cute. Hayate ended, and Mr. Hata took a well-deserved break, got married to the lady that he does Seiyu's life with. After they came back from their wedding and honeymoon, he got to work and produced, like, several months' worth of strips. And, yep, he did 2 or 3 months' worth of strips before the first chapter came out. Which I don't think it's a normal procedure, but
what do you mean? He did 4 commas or something?
No. He, like, before he published the first chapter, it was actually 2 chapters plus a little bonus chapter, which I'll talk about. But before that one, he was even in the Shonen Sunday. He actually finished, like, 2 or 3 months worth of
pages. Okay. You said, the way you said it, that was very confusing.
Yes.
Anyway.
So, yes. Okay, got it. So, before the first one was published, she already basically had a backlog.
I see. Got it.
The story, Hata really likes to have parents who hate their children.
Maybe that tells us something.
Yeah, because in this story, the main characters, parents want a child who will, what do you call it, like, have infinite potential and reach for the stars, so they name him NASA.
Why not JAXA?
I don't know. Apparently, like, I guess they were more enamored with NASA actually making it to the moon. You know, they don't live in the Space Brothers timeline. And so he is ridiculed by everybody. You know, obviously, any child with a slightly unusual name gets shit their whole life. take it from a person who has a French spelling of their name, doubly so if you have a name like NASA. So he basically, like, goes out of his way to, like, actually live up to his name, but also, you know, it almost did, like, to spit in his parents' face about it. And he then, one day, meets this girl who actually likes his name. They hit it off, and when she leaves, he tries to catch up to her to ask her her name and maybe to ask her out, and he gets hit by a truck. She takes him to the hospital, and by the time that he recovers, he can't find out who she was. So he drops out of school and basically works as a delivery man, trying to basically go around the city enough to hopefully one day deliver like a package to her and basically find out who she is. I totally forgot. When he's hit by the car, she finds him. When he's hit by the truck, he finds her and he proposes to her in his like half, you know, alive state before he gets rushed to the hospital. She finds him one day and is like, oh, remember that marriage proposal you gave me when you got hit by the truck? I'm here to, like, basically, I'm here to accept it. Let's get married. And so that's, like, the end of the second chapter. And so, like, they've basically, she knows basically Klaus from Hayate, and they get, like, quickie married. And that's basically what I've read up to so far.
And how old are the characters?
He was in college at the time that he got hit. And I think it's been like a year or two that he's been searching. So he's like, I think like in his 20s.
This seems like an unusual manga for Shonen Sunday. It sounds a little older.
No, definitely. I wonder how much that's why he wrote so many like chapters to like kind of like sell them on like this is where it's going. So yeah, no, it does seem a little older. I mean, he still clearly has like, I mean, we have a very unfortunate protagonist who you know, life just seems to shit on and, you know, gets involved in a wacky situation with you know, a very unusual girl. So it's still in the Hara vein, but it does seem to be like going, oh, I wonder almost how much just like, all right, you followed me through Hayate, which like went for over a decade. I'm maybe thinking that also he just got married. So, you know, maybe he wanted to write a manga about, you know, write what you know. I just got married, so I'm going to write a novel, you know, a new story about a character who just recently gets married. And I wonder, yeah, if it's supposed to kind of target the audience that followed him through Hayate.
It could also be that, well, let me know what you think of this. Obviously, yeah. I haven't read it, but it could be one of those things where the idea of marriage just sounds very, like, that just to me sounds like, oh man, it's about these people being married. But maybe that's just the super basic setup, and then that's like, okay, who cares? It's just wacky adventures of things that happen, and then they happen to be married. I mean, is it going to be really important domestic situations? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, the fifth chapter is out, but it hasn't been translated. So, but yeah, the first four really seem to be setting up the premise. Who's NASA? Who's this mysterious girl that he gets married to? You know, the weird circumstances of their meeting. They're getting back together. Their weird quickie marriage. The fact that she obviously has a lot of secrets. The fact that she, like, hunts him down for this, like, proposal for 2 years. She's clearly, like, either running from something or hiding something. And he has, like, these weird dreams about her, so, you know, there's clearly more to her. She also definitely has a feeling of, like, Lady Kagura, like, the lady from the moon, and, like, he keeps meeting her in moonlight situations, so I'm sure that has something to do with it. All I know is also the next chapter is called Heaven's Feel, which continues Hara's love of Taimon, which still makes me like him so much. What I thought was really interesting was they actually put out 2.5 chapters in the first magazine that it was out. So it was the first chapter, and then the second chapter, and then there was a 2.5 chapter, which was done by the author of Zezubo Sensei, who was his old mentor, and they're still friends. So The guy who does Zezubo-sensei doesn't write for Shonen Sunday anymore, writes for a different magazine, but he actually came back just to write that chapter to, like, you know, commemorate the new series. And man, it is a nasty diss track, which I feel like a lot of people didn't, like, I oddly saw a bunch of people who, like, didn't obviously get that it's, like, that they're buddies and it's, like, a, you know, like, loving parody, but kind of like a gentle roast, because, you know, he's making fun. He's like, ah, you meet this girl and you get married right away. What are, like, only like nerd virgins who read manga magazines would buy a premise like this. And then he's like, and I bet you the series isn't going to do well. So he's going to, what do you call it? He's going to rename it Hayate 2 and start throwing in all Hayate characters to boost up the sales and be like, hey, you like Hinagiku, right? Well, Hinagiku's in this series now, so read this series that you don't like so you can read about the pink-haired girl that you do like, which is also very clearly a jab at the author of Negama, who, when you call it, he often makes fun of. I know he did like a whole series of chapters just making fun of Ken Akamatsu manga in his other series. So he obviously likes taking shots at Ken Akamatsu whenever he can. And I think like there are a whole bunch of other ones, but I also think like the most ooh, ouchy burn is, and he's like, and the worst thing about this manga is no one who reads Shonen Sunday knows about getting married. And then he just has this picture of this guy reading Shonen Sunday in his lonely bachelor apartment while he looks across the street of this happy family with like a mom and dad and a little boy and girl and like a pet dog as they all read Shonen Jump together across the street. And he like looks sadly and longingly at their happy domestic bliss. If nothing else, I think you should just read the first two chapters so you can get the Zezubo-sensei diss track manga at the end of that. I think that's really, like, I don't know if everybody will like the hotter stuff, but I know a lot of people are going to like that diss track volume.
So I saw a lot of movies this month, and apparently all the anime movies also come out in February and the first half of March. All of them that are going to come out for the year. Just that's when apparently they come out. So I also went to see Free Take Your Marks, which is the newest free swimming Iwatobi swim. See, every time I say it, I even get confused because it's like, oh, you went to see a free movie? What was it? And I was like, yeah. No, the movie was called Free Take Your Mark. Like, I know it's really hard to, you know, swimming boys anime. Anybody remember? So there's actually been quite a few movies since the end of the second season, because you had like the prequel movie, then you had, there was compilation movies because we're getting another season of Free, but this movie is all new stuff, and it's, the way that it's structured though is as if it's four episodes, and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. Is this gonna be the first four episodes of the new anime? Because it could definitely be. It wasn't a two-hour movie of everybody doing, you know, like, having one, like, major goal. It was, there were even title cards.
In a way, wasn't Ancient Magus' Bride like that? Although, I feel like
not
the...
Not really.
Oh, the star, like, basically have this, like, preview, like, little thing before the season.
I guess that felt much more like an OVA, whereas this, they introduce characters in are clearly going to be, like, in the next season without actually doing anything with them.
Mm, okay.
They just set up a lot of things. I mean, there are things that happen also that that have fallout of in the movie, but it's clearly just a lot of setup and swackiness before we get to the next season. It just felt like it could have been the first four episodes of a new season of Free. That being said, it was a ton of fun. I mean, I'm not really complaining about it. I just wanted to sort of throw that out there that it was really fun, but I guess I did a little bit wish it was sort of, you know, like this grand movie experience. Which I think is just different, you know? So, crux of this is Haruka and Makoto have graduated and they're moving to Tokyo. So, part of this movie is, like, them going there and, like, you know, seeing Tokyo and trying to find apartments and figure out, you know, like, how they're kind of, like, going to function in this new place. Then we have the swim club back at Iwatobi who have not graduated, so they're, you know, trying to, like, prepare themselves to start trying to get new members to come. And then you also have Rin, who is also graduated and is planning on getting ready to leave for Australia. And then, of course, his team also kind of getting ready for, like, new members and what's going on. And, There's like kind of that like sad kind of graduation aspect of it, but there's a lot of excitement about what's going to be happening. And then the movie has a lot of like funny antics and really like stellar moments between characters. I saw this in like pretty full theater, lots of enthusiastic responses to, like any like particular characters like on screen or like any characters having certain like moments together, you know, everybody was like really into it. I think that probably the best part and the funniest part is like really late in the movie when there is like this whole complicated game of telephone that happens where all the stuff gets misconstrued because this, you know, character Momo, who is in love with Ren's sister, Go, from, you know, like, you know this from watching the other seasons, but, like, it gets misconstrued that, and, like, Ren thinks that, like, Momo and his sister are dating, but then, so, it just becomes this really, like, overblown incident and everybody is calling each other but everybody's gotten the wrong information and they just keeps getting more wrong as it goes to other people, and then it ends up with this big, like, you know, relay race that, like, all right, we're like battling. I mean, it was really, really delightful, really funny. But I do have to say that if there is any complaint I probably have, it's that there was probably a bit too much Momo in this movie, because is Momo like people's favorite character or something? I don't know really why he needed to be in it this much. He's really annoying, and I think everybody like thought he was annoying in the television series, and you can just like have like very minor like amounts of him is fine, but I felt like he was just like in this movie a little too much. On the plus side, the gray-haired kid from Rin's school that I never remember the name of is like way less annoying in this. Like, he was not annoying at all in this movie.
What?
Yeah. So I guess they made Momo just like extra annoying, and now that kid is no longer annoying.
Like Highlander style, stole his annoying quickening and gained it all. As he goes for the prize.
So I guess that was good. There is a really, you know, like, I think, like, the characters trying to figure out, like, the best way to get new members has some really great moments between, like, the old members and the new members. My, you know, one of my favorite characters in the series ended up being Sosuke, who is not part of, like, the main group, but is sort of an honorary member of the main group. You know, he's a more important character than a side character, but he's not a main character. So, I thought he had really great scenes in this movie and got me very choked up, so Sosuke, Ren, forever, and, you know, I'm, the only thing is that by the end of this movie, I wasn't sure, like, what he's doing next. I think we get a sense of, like, what everybody else is doing next, and, like I said, they also introduce, kind of, on the side, a bunch of characters that are clearly gonna be important, and at first, I thought gosh, you know, there's a lot of characters in this movie that just showing up at, like, really fortuitous times to give that one piece of advice or to, you know, really, like, say something that makes the character think. And I was like, they're using this too much. You just do that, like, once. And then I was like, oh, wait, I got it. All these people are going to be relevant later. Because I thought, geez, that's a little too much coincidence. So that, but that's kind of how they're used, is they sort of spur it on the characters at certain, like, integral moments, but they don't reveal how important they will be yet. Yeah, but I, it was really enjoyable. I was really glad to see all the characters again. It made me really excited for the new season and made me feel like, made me feel confident that the new season is not just going to be about new characters, because I think we've seen that in Yowamushi Petal comes to mind the most to me, of where these some characters graduated and I was so utterly devastated that it kind of stopped caring.
Well, it didn't help that they introduced one of the most annoying piles of dew possible.
Right. Well, we won't talk about that. But anyway, in here, it felt like the characters who graduated, they still have stories to tell, and we're going to tell those stories, and we're also going to tell these other stories. At least that's how it made me feel, so I hope that that is the case. But I felt they introduced characters that were relevant to the characters that are graduating stories, so, you know, that those stories are not ended. So I'm glad that they recognize that, and I'm glad that they realize that, hey, just because they're not necessarily in high school anymore doesn't mean we don't care anymore. So.
You know, because literally when you described that plot, the first thing that came to mind, oddly enough, and, like, I only have, like, peripheral knowledge of this, but was Kaon, because Kaon, from what little I know, you know, has, like, the seniors and then the juniors, and then the main series ends with, you know, the seniors graduating, and they try to make, like, two series, like Kaon College and Kaon High School, where Kaon College followed the girls who graduated and their college experience, and then Kaon High School dealt with the girls that were still in high school. And, like, you don't see no anime adaptation of Kaon College or Kaon High School, because apparently they weren't very popular. And so I feel like that can be tricky, and I don't know enough about the Kaon fan base to know why they didn't. I mean, we both have our theories. We mentioned it when I discussed on the podcast about reading the one Kaon College book, of, like, why we didn't think that they went along. But, like I said, I don't have any definitive knowledge of it. So what did you think about, like, I have two questions. What did you think about the dynamic of, how much do you think, if at all, the dynamic changed of, you know, the seniors who are now, former seniors who are now college? Because I feel like that might have been one of the biggest nails in the coffin of Kaon.
So in here, they haven't actually started. Like, it's the, basically kind of like the summer or the break, you want to say, before you kind of, so it's that transitional period is what this movie is kind of covering. So it's hard to say how they will handle it past that point, but it felt to me in this movie that the major focus was on the characters who were going away, that was the focus, and that would continue to be the focus, that it just because they were going elsewhere, that the story would still focus on them, because the rest of the clubs, you know, they're main-ish characters, but they're not, like, the big characters. Like, Haruka, Rin are the two main characters. And I don't think that's going to change. I think that everyone will still have stories, but I still think that those are the two main characters. So I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with that. I think everybody's very excited about it. I think people would be more upset if it was the other way around. But, you know, this is a movie before a new season, so it's possible that, oh, well, we wanted to wrap up those characters' stories, but that, like I said, it just didn't feel that way because they introduced characters that are going to be relevant specifically. So I'm feeling good. This made me feel good going into the next season. The only complaint that I have, which I have a complaint about every season of Ree, is that there was not enough swimming in this movie. There's, you know, really, like, some swimming really in the last part of it, but it's a lot of, like, goofing around and hanging out, and so I just wish there was, like, a slight... always wish there's more competition, but I still love Ree. I think this will make everybody who likes Ree very happy. It's not crazy overly fan service-y. It has enough, but it's not excessive. Like I said, they only swim, like, they swim very briefly. They're not even like, oh, we're in the pool all the time. So, they contain themselves, I guess.
They're not like, oh, man, we've got to go and model swimsuits for our upcoming meet.
Didn't happen, so.
So, I wanted to end with me diving back in to last year's Anime Strike now that it's been freed, you know, Anime Strike catalog now that it's been freed from the double paywall. I wanted to talk about one of the series that we were really looking forward to when it was announced. And we're like, oh, well, we have Anime Prime. We can see it. And we suffered through battery, so we should have some kind of reward for that. And that reward was supposed to be The Great Passage, which seemed like a really different and very Noitamina kind of, you know, story. Like, does anybody still remember Noitamina?
Isn't it still a thing?
Yeah. No.
Why wouldn't
I just, I feel like it's not talked about as much. I felt like the Noitamina show of a season was always a big event.
Well, whose fault was it that it's not?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the fans' fault.
But, which is a good point. I feel like, you know, there's definitely entries that feel very, like, this is something that's the mission statement of Noitamina. And then there are other ones who are like, ah, I guess this is a pay-the-bills season of Noitamina. You know, The Great Passage is about writing a dictionary. It seems like this very adult, you know, it's based on a actual novel, not a light novel. You know, it's about working adults. It starts with essentially one of the major members of the dictionary department of this publisher. He's basically like semi-retiring. He's going to retire, but he's not going to not work on the dictionary anymore. He's just not going to work on dictionaries like full time. And he does this just before the old man of the dictionary group, who's also kind of semi in retirement, starts this new dictionary project. So the guy who just kind of entered semi retirement is like, all right, I have to find a replacement so that, you know, to herald this project we've just started. And through a little bit of mishap, kind of the younger member who wanted to be in marketing, but kind of got thrown in the dictionary department. He scouts this other guy in sales who is clearly horrible at sales, but he notices, oh, he knows a lot about like definitions and he seems like kind of has the mindset, so I'll recruit this guy. And him falling in love with the idea of what dictionaries can do and this project, and it's kind of this like decade long story of, you know, how this dictionary gets made. There's also a little bit of he lives at this boarding house, and the woman who owns the boarding house, her daughter comes to live there, and it's a little bit of the main character and her romance as well. I will say that there is nothing surprising about this show, but it is amazingly well executed. Like, there are like a little bit of twists and turns, but I feel like nothing that will be like, oh, shocking. I did not ever see that coming. I think it's also just carried by the passion, the passion of the characters for making this book, the passion for words. Every episode is basically based on a word in Japanese, and like at the end they have a little like a definition, and you obviously, and it's obviously a word that ties into the theme of that episode. I feel like just by what you do, Kate, you might get like an extra layer of enjoyment out of it, just as someone who works in publishing. I do feel like it, like you might be like, I know those feels. I mean, you don't work on dictionaries, but I feel like there's a certain amount of shared camaraderie of having to deal with marketing, having to, you know, deal with various pressures and, you know, just the joys and tribulations of working on any kind of long form project of a book. You know, they're obviously very passionate. There are obviously a lot of hurdles. One of the biggest hurdles is, you know, dictionaries are, as they mentioned, are kind of like a odd prestige release in Japan. Also, apparently, according to the series, they're a little more personalized and characterized in Japan than, say, a much more, you know, I don't think you think of, like, the character of a Merriam-Webster dictionary here in the United States. Whereas it seems like the dictionaries in Japan, especially as they mention, like, the first modern dictionary was self-published by one guy and very much had his ethos. And it seems to have set the tone for a lot of the dictionaries in Japan. So dictionaries in Japan seem to have a very, like, each one seems to have a very distinct character. The words in it and how they're laid out very much speak to the team that put it out. And thereby, you know, they have a very specific goal of like the sea of words and how this book will help people communicate. And the main character is a very like awkward, nerdy guy. So he has difficulty communicating with his fellow staff members, with the girl he loves. And so you see his growth through working on this book that's about communicating with other people. He learns to communicate with the other staff members, with other people in the company, with, you know, his future fiance. And, you know, it's almost, it's half the story of the creation of this book and half his journey as a person.
It's really interesting what you said about the personality of dictionary. I would have never, ever known
But yeah, apparently that's a, like,
very cool.
They have these little things where, like, they're like these little dictionaries that, like, they have, like, little segments in the middle where these four dictionary characters talk to a new dictionary who doesn't have a name yet. I wonder who he will be. and they're all, like, one of them is a technical dictionary, and one of them's, like a general use dictionary, and one of them is like a, I forget this, and like another one. They all have very distinct personalities and are supposed to be representative of. Yeah, it's a really, once again, since they're all working adults, it's you know, it's definitely a show for old fogies like you and me who want to see working adults in their trials and tribulations. One thing that's very interesting about the series, since it takes so many years to get made, because the book is a prestige project, but it takes so much time and effort, and eventually dictionaries pay off, it's this weird thing of, like, the companies know that they'll pay off eventually, or at least hopefully, but they're always reluctant to put money into them because they'd much rather put a smaller amount of money into a easier-to-push-out book because
the return is quicker.
So, you know, it's, or they'll be like, well, why don't you put out this much easier to do kids dictionary? Because once again, sure, it's more, it's still work, but it's still quicker return. And so, like, in the middle, there's a huge time skip where they're basically forced to work on this other kids dictionary and, like, have to, like, only do their Great Passage dictionary on the side. But it's interesting. But it's also interesting how, like, you see, because it's, like, over a decade, you see, like, they start with, like, flip phones. And, like, by the end, you see them all using smartphones. And you, like, see, like, the, essentially, everything changes. But you can see, like, the phone technology. You can almost tell what year they're in by what kind of phones they're using and the such. And also, like, after they finish out that other dictionary, like, when they're really getting rolling, they bring on this new girl and, like, she used to work at a fashion magazine and she, like, butts heads with people because, once again, she's not good at communicating with people. And so they exile her to the dictionary department and, you know, she has to kind of, like, learn to work with them and, you know, kind of, you know, at first she sees that as a punishment and then she, you know, actually, you know, gets, you know, sees the worth in what they're doing. And she's an interesting addition to the cast. But I thought it was it's a really, like, heartwarming series in the end. I thought it was, even thinking about the ending, I'm a little choked up.
Feel verklempt.
A little bit. But yeah, I think, like I said, I don't think you'd be surprised, but I think it has a very strong emotional arc. Spoilers, they eventually publish it. And I feel like that was, the journey that you go on with them. Like, you feel a sense of, like, exhilaration and accomplishment when the book comes out. And there's also a little bit of some emotional other marks at the end. The only real complaint, which Otaku no Radio has as well, is the woman that he's interested in is really important in the first half. But since they focus a little more on when things get rolling in the second half, and they also have this new girl to integrate, his fiance, then wife, kind of fades a little more into the background. And she was such a cool character in the first half that it was a little sad that she isn't as prominent in the second half. I mean, she doesn't disappear or anything, but
I wonder if that was a time constraint, because I know this is based on a book
yeah.
which is available in English. I haven't read, but I wonder, you know, if in the book she's still there, you know, and prominent. But
I mean, she has some important scenes, but if, like, if she was your favorite character, you're going to be a little more disappointed in the second half. It's a great series. I'm really glad that, you know, it's free from the double pay wall. Definitely worth a look. Once again, if you ever have the free time, which, you know, you just have tons of.
We all do.
Yeah. I'd be very curious just to see your reaction as someone who works in publishing, if you have any kind of different insights or has a different layer feels for you, Kate. This episode's food for thought.
All right, so our food for thought this month is, what is something that got adapted into an anime, you know, a light novel or manga or whatever, a video game that got an anime but didn't really, you know, get the whole story?
This question was definitely inspired by the fact that Boogie Pop is coming back in light novels and also a new anime.
And two new manga. I mean, it's some sort of Boogie Pop celebration.
And that made me just wonder, like, what other series, if one had the willpower, especially nowadays, to resurrect, which one would it be? Listen to our song!
と下静寂変の絵に映る窓越しの篠の目夜の色鮮やかな喧騒猫のように街と街をオーライ硬い思念やワイシコーチかいよもいと息を髪の毛の癖狭い視野広い交友長い沈黙短い挨拶声のトーン 高い に近う目の奥の光超躍に内有効の跡永久の砂を皿を拾い海で大義や類義のまばらな波に飲まれては沈んでいえ正面衝突正反対もほどいては結んで Yeah.
What's your answer to the food for thought?
Okay, so how many answers do you have? Because I just have two.
I wrote a bunch down. I like, my joke answer is always, steal Angel Karumi.
The joke answer that's actually a real answer?
Look, man, they never finished that manga, and I always wanted to read the last two, what do you call it, Garbage Town volumes of that series, which I enjoyed. And, you know, if they just gave it to me in anime form, that would be fine, too. That's no answer a self-respecting human being would give. I was also just, like, looking over my anime list, and, like, this one I'm just going to bring up because it fails for two different reasons. But, like, instinctually, my brain was like, you know what would make great? Kenshin. And then I was like, oh, number one, any attempt to revive Kenshin so far has been horrible. And then learning what we have learned about the author also maybe another reason I wouldn't want it. I'm like, actually, my initial instinct is yes, more of this. Everything, and then like immediately after, everything says no, you actually don't.
Yeah, let's put Kenshin out of our minds.
The first one that I thought would actually be really cool, especially since the manga is ending soon, so you know, they could do one of those, they bring back the series, and the, you know, so they can finish up, would be Space Brothers.
Oh, wow. I mean, I think they still have a lot to cover, but that's a lovely idea.
I mean, the original series was pretty long, so if they did, like, two or three more seasons to end that up, wrap that up, that would be really great, especially the way it's all tying together in the end.
I didn't realize that was wrapping up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, like, the author said the end is in sight, so that essentially this is going to be, like, the final storyline. So, you know, I think once that ends up, or at least is close to ending up, if they, you know, put out a second anime, I think we'd all enjoy seeing Muda's trip to the stars.
Oh, yes. Oh, such a moving series. So good. Great. That is a great answer, Al.
Almost unequal as Steel Angel Karumi.
Yeah, almost. I mean, obviously we can't go to those heights all the time, but good try. My first reaction when I thought of this question was Bakano.
Oh, that was one on my list as well.
That's my number one. That's what I want. I think it would be really fun, although having started to read the light novels a bit, I do kind of wonder if we have seen the best or the stuff that I would be the most interested in, but I'm still willing to, you know, go forth and see more of, I'd like to see more of it adapted.
And not to be on a too down note, because it has a happy ending, I know this from Fate Grand Order and the fact that he was working on Fate Strange Fake. The author of the Bakano novels was sick for a while. They thought it was cancer. It turned out, you know, just to be, you know, an overly premature diagnosis, you know, and you should just assume cancer. And then if it turns out it isn't, no one is like, ah, man. but so he's okay. They treated what he had, which wasn't cancer, and he's back to writing. So that's a little more of a possibility. That was a little in question for a while there.
And, you know, they did so much durarara, and the, when some of the durarara staff was at Otakon, they expressed interest in, you know, oh, we'd love to do Bakano, or, like, get to do more Bakano at some point, so.
And if I remember correctly, durarara was the one that was really popular in Japan, whereas Bakano was really popular here, so I'm sure there are many an American fan who would totally agree with you. Like I said, it was on my list as well. You know what I'd like to see more of also? And I think this is another one you'll be like, you, sir, I agree with you. Giant Killing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like, you know, it really felt like where they ended in the anime, there's more stories to tell. Apparently, they didn't do great here, but, you know, it seems to be a popular series in Japan, so it's not out of the question that it could get more you know, anime in Japan. And, you know, I think we both liked, you know, the more adult angle to that series and wanted to, you know, see how the team and their, you know, their coach would do.
And I think that it came out a little before the latest sports boom. You know, it wasn't, it was a little bit before that. And of course, as we all know, sports are always popular in Japan, but there's such a sports fever right now in anime, it feels like, that maybe, yeah, if they did a new season now, that it, maybe it would catch on a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I thought, once again, I thought we'd both be like, approved.
Yeah, I mean, at least with that one, the manga, you know, is coming out in English, which was such a long shot. But yeah, that would be really good. My other answer is kind of digging back because, you know, I feel as though a lot of more modern stuff either gets a lot of anime or, I don't know, I feel like it's somewhat more accessible. But, you know, the 90s had tons of manga that got, like, one episode OVA or, like, two episode OVA, and that was it, and that was all there was. And most of those things, I mean, we've gotten the manga since then, so we have it, but lots of stuff from the 90s comes to mind.
I was going to joke, you said one episode, but my one joke, when you just said from the 90s, I was like, Kate, you don't have to worry. Sorcerer Stabber Orphan is getting new anime. Your wish. I know you basically, as far as I can tell, have no opinion on, unless you have an opinion on Sorcerer Stabber Orphan. It popped, when you said 90s, it just popped into my head as, yeah, Kate would never pick this.
No. So if I was going to pick one, which I seriously could pick so many, but I think I would pick Basara, which, again, is a manga that we did get all released in English and is available digitally out of print as books. But, you know, just a really awesome shoujo fantasy dystopia epic adventure. And I believe it got, you know, one of those sort of just, hey, we're just celebrating by animating a little bit of it kind of a thing in the 90s, so...
Now I was going to, my last
answer. Now I've thought of more. Now that we're okay. Doing this, now I've thought of more.
So, all right. So I'll do one more, and then you can do another one. Because your thing sparked something in my head. So, one that the library, because I just took a trip to the library, made me think of was, I'd love to see more Master Keaton. We never got all the, there were a bunch of stories they never adapted from the original manga. And then, recently, Urasawa went back and did Master Keaton Remastered. So there's a whole bunch of new stories from the new series. And I feel like, you know, that's just such a great seinen stories. And it's episodic, so you can just, you know, put back stories and, you know, you just slide right in. Yeah, it would be really fun. Or if, you know, if you don't, there's like a little bit of a time skip. I think there's like a 10-year gap, you could just go into those remastered stories if you want it to be a little more modern. And that just seems like a great series to come back to.
My final answer is Chocoton, which was part of the dog panel that I ran at Otakon. And it's about this adorable dog, Chocoton, who has the ability to sort of like speak with humans, but nobody else really realizes that. And it's just a really cute romance series because her master, this girl, is in love with this guy who also has a dog. It's really super cute and has had a really adorable little OVA that was delightful, had a song that you couldn't get out of your head. Yeah, so I would love a full Chocoton TV series.
Kate, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent and then I'll give you my last answer. But since I went to the library, I also stopped by Kinokuniya. And Beastars has beasts that are not dogs and wolves. There's also other animals because they had a whole Beastars section. And so I saw a bunch of books, not just like the latest book and the first book, and there were other animal people on it. So there you go. The answer that nobody asked, I gave, I solved that mystery from The Last Speakeasy.
Mm.
My answer, I feel like back in the day, I think a lot of people would have been a little hesitant and been like, I don't know, those two episodes were good, but it could have easily been a fluke. Maybe I want to leave it like that. But I feel like with Guru Guru and Pop Team Epic, I have a little more faith that in the right hands, this could make a great TV series that could live up to the legendary heights of the two episodes that we got. And I think with a little bit of Guru Guru massaging, really could hit a modern audience well in the classic dream, Dragon Half.
That it's so funny that you brought that up, because I was just thinking about Dragon Half, because the first manga omnibus actually comes out this month.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I was wondering. I mean, I think it might need a little Guru Guru massaging, but I have a little more faith that a good comedic studio with a good writer and director could really take Dragon Half and make it shine.
That's a really good choice of, yeah. See, I feel as though there's a lot of that in the past, a little bit more than you see it now. Mm-hmm. So, or you get more. You might not get the whole story now, but you get more than just these random one or two offs that happened in the past.
The most fascinating news and conversations from this month. I have a confession to make. K9 killed the brindled calf under the pale moonlight and summoned the demon to fulfill one of our wishes. When we asked the demon for our first wish, it turns out to bring Gakuto to an American concert was way too much. The things that he wanted us to do was too hard. So we went for our second wish and we got a new Ikihara anime. after Yurikuma, it seems like Ikahara wasn't in the anime doghouse that long. So it seems like we're getting pretty quickly a new Ikahara anime. Not like, you know, immediately on the heels. But for him, this is like pretty much immediately.
I feel as though that's not a very long gap. I mean,
Yeah.
It's, I guess we don't, do we have an official date of when this is coming out? 2019, I guess. Yes. So, you know, it's the same length of time between Penguin Drum and Yurikuma. So.
Mm-hmm. But there's not too much about it. It's called Sara Zanmai, and it's got a bunch of Ikahara-esque imagery in the trailer videos. You know, weird.
Well, not even trailers.
Yeah, like teasers. But, it, you know, the iconography reminds me a lot of Penguin Drum and Yurikuma. You know, it has a cryptic voiceover saying strange things. You know, the website says, don't let go. Desire is life. Yeah, desire is your life. So, you know, it probably will be filled with sexuality and, you know, identity and lots of strange, you know, artistic imagery. So, you know, Ikahara as hell.
I think it's really exciting that MAPPA is involved in this one. So this is, you know, the first time that they'll be producing it along with Lapin Track, whoever they are. Or they worked, I guess they did Yurikuma, so.
Yeah, and I feel like Mariyama's pretty, like, loosey-goosey about letting the directors, you know, do what they need to do to tell a story. So, you know, I feel like a lot of times, Ikahara sometimes gets penned in. Plus, I feel like MAPPA is a very competent studio. So, you know, you don't have to worry about that. Yeah, it looks like this might be able to unlock even a further level of Ikahara goodness.
And I did like that the teasers for this that they did, there are three of them, and they debuted them during an Utena marathon. I don't know if that's significant at all, you know, is it, you know, is that somehow a hint about anything? I'm not sure. Or if it was like, well, Utena is just this classic, you know, this is the perfect way to sort of
pitch to the fan base.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be either way, knowing him. But yeah, I am very excited. I'm also trepidatious. You know, like, Yurikuma was a show that I thought had... there was such brilliance in there, but it also was, like...
a little too gratuitous.
It was a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I feel really uncomfortable sometimes watching this. And I never really felt that way watching Utena or Penguin Drum. So, I'm like...
You want...
be leaning more that way, you know?
I feel like you've just got to let the man work and see what he produces. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. He's one of my favorite directors. So, wow me, sir. Wow me. Just, you know, maybe... I'm not saying be prudish. I mean, be sexual as all hell. I'm just saying, maybe be a little more, you know... I don't want to say artistic, but a little more veiled.
Well, the thing was that Yurikuma was full of metaphor and innuendo, but it was also... full of other things, so it was less subtle.
It wasn't full softcore porn, but damn, at points you know it wanted to be.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I'm sure we'll have lots to say as more details get released about this. And speaking of favorite directors, Shinichiro Watanabe announced a new anime with Bones called Carol and Tuesday. It's a totally original series, so I think that's really exciting because it's also has to do with music somehow, and that's really like his passion, I feel like. Or that's like when his best, you know, like work is like he really wants the music to be such an integral part of the anime. And so I'm just like really excited that it's also original and that, you know, it's just going to be something completely new. And the character designs look really cool for it and unique. I'm just totally ecstatic. And auditions are open, guys. So April 25th is your time to audition for this, for the main characters. So I think we should all go out, you know, really give it our best shot.
Kate, you're gonna fly for Carol or Tuesday.
Yeah, anybody, you know, also, and this is also coming out in the spring of 2019. So maybe we'll have an Ikuhara and a Watanabe the same time.
Man, that is either going to be the, if that is true, that would either be the most awesome season or the most disappointing.
Or it would be a season full of expectation.
Yes. Possibility.
Huge.
Of a master.
And I like how at the end of this announcement for Carol and Tuesday, it says, the anime's worldwide broadcast is under consideration. Is there any...
doubt?
Yeah. I mean, does that mean they're trying to get it on Netflix maybe or something?
Look, Kate, with the number of shows that Netflix is pumping out, if you said that, I wouldn't be surprised. I was just... I once again turned on Frasier today, and I was like, oh, another new Netflix anime.
Incredible.
I'm not surprised anymore. I'm only surprised when I load up Netflix for my Frasier and there isn't a new anime announcement there.
More, I'm sure, again, same kind of deal. As more news comes out about this, I'm sure we'll be talking about it frequently up until its premiere.
So, Kate, do you think that he could get Yoko Kanno to work on this one as well?
So, the music is by... it says Flying Dog is in charge of music production.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what that means.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if Yoko Kanno is anyway affiliated with Flying Dog or not. He's another director beloved by many, including the both of us, so it'll be fun to see what he produces. So we've been talking about a lot of things currently in production that, you know, we hope to see blossom into wonderful series. But there is something that has blossomed out of its beta phase, and that is High Dive. They just announced that, you know, High Dive is no longer in beta. They're going to add an extra dollar to the subscription. I think you can still get in and get, you know, lock in the, you know, beta price if you were kind of on the fence.
Yeah, you could. It says you can actually lock it in for the next 2 years if you subscribe before April 9th. So then it would be $3.99 a month.
So, you know, if you were kind of waffling, you know, you might want to take advantage of that. And as we've said, it has a pretty decent selection of shows. And they're actually making some strides to put in some older shows as well as a bunch of, you know, new shows that not ADV, a.k.a. Sentai and its affiliated companies put in there.
Yeah, it's just the price. I mean, I think the price is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think $4.99 is not unreasonable. They have a lot of older titles on there, which I think is really cool. Like Kashurn and, you know, just... I think they have, like, a much older selection of stuff if you want to watch some older anime, as opposed to, like, Crunchyroll doesn't really have a lot of, like, super back catalog.
Yeah, I know they have a bunch of old Tomino stuff, like Zabungle and classic Legend of Galactic Heroes, which is...
Oh, I thought you were going to say Space Runaway Ideon, which we reviewed.
And we eventually have to get to that movie.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, so I feel like this is sort of a place that maybe you can go if you want, like, to try out, like, all the, you know, anime from the past. This is a really good place to do that. But, you know, that they're coming out of beta, they're upping the price, but, like, it's this is weird thing where when it was $3.99, you could pay a dollar extra to do for, like, different things. But now those things will be included with the $4.99, so, like, it's kind of evens out, I think. Because you couldn't get the high resolution or something like that. So I'm sure they were like, you know what? This is too complicated. Just make it straightforward. I think that's definitely the way to go. I've only tried out the trial. I have not. I guess I have a couple more weeks to, you know, sort of just decide if I want to go in all the way. And the other thing that, you know, got announced... That just happened that opened up is my anime list now has a manga store. So you can buy digital manga on my anime list. You can read it online there. And as far as I can tell, it's not really like an app. Maybe you could do it in their browser. I'm not sure. On your phone. But I was looking at it on the website that you could, you know, read it. The feel of it is very like... the Viz Reader, if you've ever used that. Or the Crunchyroll one. Like, it's very similar. But it has Viz manga. It has Kodansha manga. So, it has a pretty huge, like, collection of stuff already available, which I thought was really cool. It is pay. You know, it's not a subscription or anything. So, you pay per volume. One of the things I liked on the site is they have a section... If you go, you know, and go to their store, they have a section that's manga with currently airing anime section. I think that's such a smart section. Like, oh, yeah, that's perfect. I really liked that. I thought that was really good. I don't know. I guess I don't know what the advantage is of, you know, say, buying it here versus just buying it from Viz directly or something, you know?
I mean, I was about to say, I think the important thing for a lot of these things is just... you know, be in as many storefronts as possible because you never, you know, someone might randomly put stuff into Amazon, but, you know, they might not think to look there. So if you've got, you know, if you're in Amazon, if you're on Right Stuff, if you're, you know, also on My Anime List, that's another place where somebody could go, oh, yeah, I guess I'll get this volume. I feel like it's probably a smart move, especially... with, you know, everybody, as you've mentioned, everybody's still trying to figure out how to best do digital sales. I feel like, you know, every opportunity, every chance to catch some eyeballs, you know, make people aware that this is another way that they can get their manga is probably the best for everybody.
I didn't think of it, but I liked how you put it out, that it's like putting it in a storefront. It's it's the equivalent, because I wasn't thinking about it like that, but, you know, now that so few stores, you know, there's not as many bookstores, there's not as many comic book stores, that sort of thing, where do you put stuff in the window idea? And yeah, so that is how you do it digitally, I guess. Make affiliates and things like that. And they have everything. They have, you know, they've got all the big stuff. My Hero Academia, One Piece, it's all there. So it's not, you know, a real limited selection.
I wonder if the price is good and, you know, like you said, the selection is great. That's not something you have to worry about. And if it's easy, I feel like, and this will come up in the next story, and this will come up many a times throughout the years. And but one of the big things that manga companies have always worried about, even when they claimed they didn't, is piracy. And as we've seen time and time and time again, the only way to really fight piracy is to offer a option that is slightly more convenient. Because if it's slightly more convenient, people are willing to pay. Or at least people who would have paid are willing to pay. I mean, there are always the people who will jump through 30 hoops just so they don't have to spend the buck. But you are probably never going to get money from those dudes anyhow. And so I feel like if this is, you know, just, oh, I go hop on my anime list and, oh, hey, new volume of My Hero. Sure, here you go. Here's $2. And you conveniently read it. I wonder if it will help, because once again, I see more and more companies like actively worrying about piracy. So, you know, I think that something like this could really help.
The prices are the same price. Mm-hmm. So the digital volumes are not cheaper than
physical
volumes. Or if they are, it's like a dollar. I mean, it's still, you're just still looking at least $6.99 to $10.99.
You're not paying like 99 cents a volume.
No, nothing like that. You can preview stuff though, so it does have that feature, which I think is pretty universal at this point, where you can check something out a little bit before you commit. But, I mean, I think because digital is the new frontier, you know, people are feeling like they shouldn't be discounting it, that it's like, this is just as viable as a print book, and if people want it digitally, theoretically, they'll go for it. And that kind of leads into, you know, this final story for this episode, which is digital manga volume sales have overtaken print manga in Japan for the first time. So physical sales are down 14% and digital sales are up 17%. And this was annual sales for 2017. So in taking into account the whole year.
I mean, it makes sense, especially since Japan in general really has been at ease with reading stuff on their phones for longer. Not that, like, you know, I feel like we're just catching up, but for Japan, it's been so second nature for the longest time. And I think we've been slowly seeing this trend of physical sales being down and, you know, digital sales going up. I personally did not see the switch off happening this soon, but in retrospect, it makes perfect sense.
Interestingly, the article goes on to say that combined print and digital sales are down 0.9%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you combine, so they're almost, I mean, that's almost breaking even. So, like, you know, physical is down, digital is up, but it's almost like, you know, the people who didn't pick up those physical volumes are picking them up digitally. You know, it's not as if they're leaving the market or something like that. Although it's this article is confusing me, because at the beginning of it, it says digital volume sales are up 17% compared to the previous year. But then later it says the growth rate for digital comics also shrunk last year. So I'm not sure why it says both of those things. I am a little slightly,
you know the old saying, lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, how can it be both? But maybe I'm not. Maybe it's, I mean, this is a Anime News Network article that's translating a Japanese article, so maybe there's some nuance that I'm missing about those different figures. You know, I mean, I don't know the difference between the words up and down. That's the problem. I'm not sure if someone could explain it to me. A few episodes ago, you know, we talked about there was a similar article about, you know, I think it was about magazine sales being down, but then you know, it didn't account for all the digital sales. So, I mean, I just think it makes sense, especially with manga. That's the way I'm starting to go. If it's something I really, really love or has a really nice release, I'll go for the physical, but otherwise, I am doing a lot more digital buying.
I mean, that's how you just recently caught up with One Piece.
Well, that was the library for 85 of those volumes.
But, I mean, everything past that point to get up to the current chapter you've done online.
Right. You know, just having that weekly Shonen Jump subscription makes all the difference. So I do feel like it makes sense to me as just because, especially with like longer series, you know, we've talked about this a lot. But also, I think it's very interesting that Japan is so, they seem so against it, yet it makes so much sense, especially because I think typically people live in much smaller spaces there, and they're pretty used to kind of, having less space, essentially, so.
I just, and once again, if someone is more of a cultural expert, they could correct me, but I feel like there's still such a prestige to written books in Japan, whereas I feel, once again, digital stuff is kind of like here, considered more for the hoi polloi. And so...
Digital is?
Yeah, yeah. So I wonder how much it's like they're clinging to like the prestige and like, you know, just the overall more perceived value of the written, like having physical books, even if for some, all the reasons you mentioned, it seems like digital would be the, you know, the ones that, you know, would make a lot more sense for the market.
And, you know, in the US, we've really seen that there's like a certain amount of people who will buy ebooks, you know, and then like it kind of just plateaus and balances out. It doesn't super eat into each other. Or eventually kind of like seems to have found like an equity. So I wonder if it's just there's like big movement right now, but it'll kind of even out. Like I said, if I'm reading this right, which I don't think that I am at this point, you know, there's only like a 0.9% difference from overall sales if you're combining sales from the year before. So, and a lot of that can be attributed to big series ending, I guess. That's what they're blaming a lot of, like some of the down.
And haven't they just been worried about, you know, the rapidly aging population generally has also just been taking a bite out of manga and anime sales as well. Just less kids around to buy the more popular kid series.
That's interesting. It doesn't say that, but that's an interesting point.
So, I mean, but it would make sense that, you know, the kids that you have around would be more interested in buying stuff on their phones and on their computers. So, I don't think this is a trend that we'll see reverse or halt anytime soon.
All right. So just a reminder, again, our next episode is our 100th episode. So if you want to leave us a message or write us an email, we'll read it on there or ask us anything. I think I'm going to, you know, kind of compile a bunch of questions. But if you want us to answer one of your questions, we'll totally do that as well.
Make them cool.
That wraps up another Speakeasy podcast. Remember to visit ReverseThieves.com for all kinds of content to tide you over until the next episode.
One more thing.
I am 100% caught up with One Piece.
All right.
I am right there. I just finished the chapter where, you know, Luffy is gotten out of the mirror and they're like, Sanji's there taking him back to the ship and they're like, we're coming. And like, yeah. So I'm like 100% caught up. All right.
So do you think in any way they'll make putting his kind of like Kaya, this like love interest he has, off to the side?
I don't know. I feel as though Oda is like so not interested in like having any romance. I mean, I feel like it's kind of just like silly. I feel like she's in love with him the way that Boa Hancock is in love with Luffy, where it's like no normal person reading this thinks this means anything. I mean, that's how I read it.
Okay, that's fine. I was just like, maybe I was just hoping that it would block any possibility of some kind of Sanji Nami ending.
That's not going to happen.
Because Kate still draws breath.
Like, that's not happening. So, don't worry, Al. That's not a problem.
All right.
That is not a problem you have to think about.
Okay. Nope. It's something that worries me every once in a while.
No.
I just have to wake up in the middle of the night.
Yes. Your anxiety, you know, is real. It's okay. Your feelings are real. But I think that you can leave that to me. Just don't have to worry about it. I'm just...
Oh, but you finally met Big Ichabod's wife.
Who? What? Who's? Yes. Lola's sister, Chiffon. Yeah, she's awesome. She's really great. Both of those sisters are like, they're like the best female characters in the series, basically.
Yeah, I was just like, I didn't want to blow. I was like, oh, wait, Kim might not be up to it. Let me.
No, I was very excited about that. Love her. I actually really liked that, like, they had, like, that Pudding and her teamed up and they were like, we gotta go bake this cake. Like, we gotta remake the cake. I thought that was cool. What I'm actually most interested in this entire arc is what else was in the Tamat chest. Like, because it blew up and it blew up Cake Island. And I was like, but was there only a bomb in it? Or was there, like, a bomb in it because it was... protecting, like, whatever else was in it.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely something else. Oh, but,
You also say that like you know.
No, I don't, actually.
I was like, because now I know that we're at the same point. So I know Al can't know.
No, I was going to say, no, what I was interested in is, but you now see who else of the guests is actually Cypher Zero.
Yes. What's her name? The lady.
But yeah, I didn't want to reveal it. She's the lady who has like some cover job, but she's actually really Cypher Zero.
And now I can't figure out, like, I don't know.
What?
Cypher Pole, just like, I feel as though, obviously they're a group of assassins. Well, Cypher, whatever, what was it? Cypher 9 or whatever they were. CP9 was like a group of assassins. But I'm like, okay, is Cypher Pole like the same, or is it like, well, no, this is a different branch of the organization, so like their role is different.
I got the impression that like Cypher, like what's his name, Rob Lucci and them, was like a Wetworks team. They weren't like actual spies, they were just assassins.
Right. But I know that they were just assassins.
These guys, I assume, are actual like spies, like actually, like they don't get their hands dirty unless they have to, but they're more about like toppling governments and getting information. And
but yeah, but then I'm sort of like, oh, but it's like, okay, well, who is their leader and whose side are they really on? Because yes, I know they're employed by the world government, but like, as we know, like that doesn't really mean a whole lot because all kinds of people are employed by the world government and everybody has their own agenda. And now that Rob Lucci is part of Cypher Zero. Like, what does that mean? And, but no, the thing that's bothering me the most is, what's in the chest?
No.
Carrot's power was really cool. I thought the reveal of the minx, like Peckham's and Carrot, I thought that was really cool. I love that Nami has been so useful in this arc and done all kinds of stuff.
I need to share one thing, but I love that one where she captures the little cloud.
Yeah.
And she's and he's like, oh, so we can be friends. And she's like, oh.
Is that what you thought?
Yeah, she's like, is that what you thought? No. What do you call it? You can either be my slave or you can die.
Yeah. She's been really good in this arc, like, doing lots of stuff. I now see why you guys all think that Jinbei is going to join the crew. Mostly because of that singular scene where he, like, steers the ship in the green room wave part, which, like, nobody else could have done. And he says something like, we have the best navigator, we have the best something else, all you need is the best, like a great helmsman or something like that.
Maybe it was shipwright with Frankie?
Something, but Frankie wasn't there, so I was like, did he say, I don't remember.
Maybe the ship?
I took a screenshot, maybe he said the ship, but I took a screenshot of it, but I was like, oh, like, I get why everybody thinks that. And obviously he said, like, I'm gonna go join this, I mean, it's not like he hasn't said, but like, people say shit all the time, doesn't matter. But I thought that moment sort of solidified to me why he is a favor to join.
So, now that you're caught up. So, one of the few fan theories I have stumbled upon is that because it's, I also keep forgetting to look for it, but since that is a common fan bandied around thing and possibly from an actual interview that 9 and 10 will come at the same time, people are like, oh, if we get Jinbei, is Carrot gonna be the other person who joins the crew? I know. Did Carl tell you his theory?
Big Mom.
Mm-mm-mm.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah, no, that was my...
I think that's a super long shot. I think it's possible, like, maybe the Big Mom Pirates will be, like, affiliate.
Yeah.
Like, Straw Hat affiliate, like how the other all the other groups were. But even then, like, I don't know. I'm kind of still feel like... I don't know. I guess maybe they could, like, have another twist. But, you know, like, which, I mean, don't, I'm not putting it past Oda to do so. But, you know, like, the goal in this arc is not to defeat her. It's to get away. So, like, I'm not even 100%, I'm not even actually expecting them to, like, even try to take her on. Because, like, basically this whole arc has been just, like, avoiding her and, like, running from her and trying to get her to, like, this cake so that they can get out of here. And I guess I'm just letting them lead me, but like I kind of don't think that this is going to be resolved. Like I think it's going to be like, no, we're going to get away, because like presumably the Emperor's, as far as we know, so far, are the most powerful beings in the world. And
other than maybe it's like the admirals, and even then it's more of a question of like, you know, it's Superman versus Goku, like the people.
Good point though. Like you're right. The admirals could be at the same level, but Luffy just barely makes it out of the fight with Katagiri,
and he's
like, I mean, he's probably the strongest, besides maybe Jinbei, of the Big Mom Pirates, besides Big Mom herself. So, like, that's definitely, like, a huge feat. And his bounty was 1 billion berries. So, it's not like he was nobody. But, like, Luffy barely escaped from that fight. He's asleep. There's no way that he can take on an emperor right now. So, I feel like they're gonna escape.
So, the only other interesting thing is...
I guess somebody could show up.
The only other interesting thing is... Who is the lady who is, like, Big Mom's adopted mom?
Oh, yeah. The lady who runs... Sister Carmel.
Carmel. Do you remember what her power was?
Her power was the same as Big Mom's. That's what was so... that was, like, one of my big questions that I was very confused about. Because I was, like... Because she had the same power. So I'm, like, did Big Mom eat her? Like, because we don't know what happened to them.
So I heard an interesting theory that... What if Sister Carmel is possessing Big Mom?
I wasn't thinking possessing, but I was wondering if, like, Because Sister Carmel can put souls into things, if, like, Big Mom was killed or something, and then she, like, reanimated her or something. Mm-hmm. Because I don't understand what happened.
So the theory I thought that was pretty good is that she was nearing the end of her life, so she put her soul in Big Mom, and she's been, like, basically, she's, like, possessing Big Mom and the one in control, and that's why she freaks out whenever the picture of her gets destroyed. And that, like, Big Mom is, her...
two halves.
Yeah, it's like the original Big Mom is trying to escape every once in a while, and that's where her freakouts
are. That's a really interesting theory. That's why I like that. I like that. Because, like, yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, what happened? Because do they just disappear and all the kids also disappear? And so I was like, I just didn't understand. Like, I know that she was evil and that she was selling children to the government. Totally know that was happening. But, like, the thing that's interesting about that, though, to me, is that Big Mom was still evil. Mm-hmm. Like, because mm-hmm. she was evil, before yeah. she was yeah. possessed. I mean, she was a child, yeah. but, like, she murdered a town. So, like, sorry. You know, no free passes. I just think it's interesting mm-hmm. that, like, it's very hard for me to imagine Luffy teaming up with somebody like that.
Oh, I was more thinking that maybe this arc ends with the cake and some other stuff. Them figuring out she's being possessed. Them unpossessing her. Big Mom coming to the forefront. And basically, all right, we're not cool, but you helped me up enough that I'll let you go.
For now.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's interesting.
Because that means they aren't cool, they aren't, but it lets them get away for now. Basically, they get Sanji back as the part of the deal. They get to run off. They don't have the big fight. They don't have to lose against Big Mom, but they haven't won nor lost. It's a draw. They go to their separate corners. I thought that was like, I was like, with that theory, I'm like, that's a good way for this to end. They've seen the power of a yonkai. Yonkai, it seems like a very...
I like that. And also, that sort of makes sense because I had a feeling that it would be jokey, but that something is going to happen when Big Mom eats Sanji's cake. Because they're like, everybody mm-hmm. has this like crazy reaction every time they eat it. And so I'm like, I know it's going to be a joke, but I also think it's going to be story relevant. Like, something is going to happen when she eats that cake. So maybe that's like what splits the mm-hmm. personality or something, is like when she eats the cake.
That is my personal theory of what's going to happen. And I think, like you said, like, there's no way at this point in the story they can beat Big Mom. So something like that would basically, they beat Sister Carmel would be.
Kinda.
Would make much more sense.
No, that's interesting because I also feel like. There, I mean, again, like, obviously plans change and the story can go any which way Oda wants, but, like, the whole point of going to this island was actually so that they could go fight Kaido. And so it's like, wait, on the, like, I mean, of course, like, on the way to something, maybe something else happens, but, like, the whole point was, like, go fight this completely other emperor. So I just feel like they set up that story so much, like, further. And there's, like, so much that they already set up about that it's, like, almost bizarre if they, like, now go defeat another emperor to me. Mm-hmm. Because it was, like, I mean, the last three arcs have been about getting to Kaido. Like, because it's, like, since Punk Hazard, like, that's, mm-hmm. like, all been about, like, I mean, Doflamingo, but also that's, like, the gateway to Kaido. Like, it's all, like, they've built up so many arcs trying to get to that, like, I don't know. It's like, I mean, Big Mom has, they've talked about her previously, but, like, it just felt like this was supposed to be, like, oh, we need, like, these few things so that we can go and, like, fight Kaido. Like, so, like, this is not for now. That's interesting. Yeah. Should be good. Very exciting. I'm so happy that I'm caught up. Like, I was like, today I was just like knocking out chapters because I was so close that I was mm-hmm. like, no, all right, I'm just gonna take the iPad with me. I'm gonna read it on the train. I'm gonna read it at lunch. I'm gonna read it when I get home. Like, I'm gonna just do it so that I am done.
Oh, so what did you think about? So I'm also curious. I still think it's, I think it's still on wiper territory. But what do you think of the Kara joining the crew?
Oh, I mean, her power is cool. I think that she's, like, cool. I think she's been really useful in this, in the arc.
And my only other theory is she would balance the male-female ratio of the crew a little bit more evenly.
I'd love for there to be more women join the crew. And, like, she does have a lot of things that Luffy likes, because obviously she's a weird animal person. He would be like, yes, cool, I'm into that. And then also, like, the thing that I feel like maybe tips it in her favor a little bit is that she basically joined the crew on a whim because she was like, I want to go on an adventure. Like, that's basically her, like, that's such like a Luffy move is to be like, well, I just want to go on an adventure. So here I am. And I feel it doesn't feel like she's really attached to being home. I have to protect my village. I have a family. I have to like do all this stuff. Like she feels like really game to like, all right, I'm cool. Like I'm ready to peace out of this place and like go elsewhere. So I feel like maybe that's like a point in favor for that because like, I feel like a lot of other characters, they're like really connected to like where they are.
Whereas whole thing is she just wants to see the world.
Yeah, she's
beyond
like,
her little elephant.
It, you know, like, let's go. So, like, I feel like that's, like, you know, like, and she has, like, a power that, I mean, I guess her power is kind of like Chopper's monster form. So, like, maybe that's, like, a strike against it, because it's like, well, it's kind of like, I mean, obviously Chopper's has multiple forms that do different, he can do different things, but, like,
But she has the lightning martial arts, which is, you know.
She has lightning martial arts, but, like, Nami has lightning, and if she really keeps the cloud, she has, like, extra super good lightning.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm like, yeah. I just wanted to float it
out
there.
But I was like, but maybe she'll join some other crew. Like, I could definitely see that happening because there's a lot of other crews in this arc, too. So, like, maybe she'd be like, well, I'm not joining the Straw Hats, but, like, cool, now I'm joining, I don't know, whoever, maybe.
Those guys from Wano.
Or maybe she'll be like, that was the adventure I needed. Now I'm ready to go home and train because she's supposed to be a musketeer and Pedro did die. So like maybe she's like, well, now I have to go home and like take Pedro's place.
Yeah. No. I was just like, once again, once again, as I said, I like her. If she were to join, I wouldn't have a problem. But she does seem randomly like a, well, I'm here for an arc and then I'm gone kind of character.
I think so too.
And, you know, basically one of those people will show up at the end for the, you know, the big battle with like a bunch of other people. But yeah, not I'm a permanent crew member person, but she seems to have her distinct supporters.
Well, she's free to join. Get rid of Sanji. Fortunately, he's not going anywhere. Nobody else can cook. I mean, Pudding's power is really cool.
We've decided to keep Pudding.
Was only kind of evil, and she's only super evil to Sanji. So, really, she can cook, and she has a way cooler power than him. So, I think I would go that route. I know that you guys did all this to get Sanji back, but along the way, things changed.
You can join your Tokusatsu assassin family.
Evil, man. They're evil. I mean, his sister's not so evil, but they're horrible human beings. But yeah. Anyway, yes. So I'm just very happy. I have lots of ideas. I'm very excited to just, like, now nobody knows more than I know, and, like, and just as FYI, I'm telling Carl this too. I mean, it should be obvious, but now One Piece spoilers are not okay. Like, not okay anymore. Do not ever say anything unless you know I've read the most recent chapter. I'm just like, I'm ready because I want to speculate. I get to speculate about who the next crew member is. I get to speculate about what the next storyline is. I get to speculate about everything.
and you're still at the point where you can still speculate about new crew members.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like theoretically, you could, like,
I if could, you it waited, end.
Yeah, if you waited like another year, you might be out of that ability to do so.
Exactly. I can.
You too can support wipers.
I can make up random characters that will join the crew. I can speculate about, like, what's Blackbeard's, like, fucking power? And what's Luffy's whole, like, how come certain people can hear the voice of the world or whatever? All kinds of stuff. All kinds of things. All the things. I get to be at the forefront. I can't believe I read 900 chapters of One Piece. I think it's almost... Is it 900? It's close.
Yeah, no, I remember somebody saying that, like, mentioning 900 recently, okay, because they were like, man, that's a stone's throw from 1,000.
And it's not close to over.